Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back. Hour two of the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Want to thank my most recent guest, a fine one, somewhat tardy in her exit, but she's still sighting the door. She is Sarah Godlewski. She is the Wisconsin State Treasurer and a U.S. senatorial candidate. We like Sarah. We appreciate her coming around. Hour two of this big show, though, you can be a part. Sorry we didn't sneak any calls in during Sarah's appearance, but if you've got comment, I think she's still listening at 844-967-2789. We'll go there next. Evan, also, we got some sound this hour, I understand. I'm looking for my sound tab. Let's talk about Donald Trump and his contemptuous nature for the courts. And now it's been upheld by the federal judge, or I guess in this case, a New York State judge, contempt of court. Thanks again, Sarah. So here is the article, the newest, hot off the presses from the Raw story. A New York judge has held Donald Trump in contempt of court. Well, he is contemptuous of the courts. Here's what this article reports, though. A New York judge on Monday said that he would hold former President Donald Trump in civil contempt of court. So he's not going to get his ass thrown in jail, per se, but in civil contempt of court for failure to produce documents that were subpoenaed by the New York Attorney General, Letitia James. Now, why wouldn't he want to give up those documents? Because they could very well be incriminating of the man. And I know that this is a civil suit, but this is against the Trump organ, effectively. If you're cooking the books, it means your actions are probably illegal. It's probably fraud. But anyways, back to the reporting here. At a hearing on Monday, Judge Arthur Engoron, and I'm going to spell that for you, E-N-G-O-R-R-O-N, Engoron heard arguments that Trump should be held in contempt because he refused to turn over documents about his business dealings. Yeah, because if he turns them over, he's going to be found guilty. Anyways, the Trump organization is suspected of fraudulently manipulating property values to obtain loans and tax deductions. And earlier this year, Trump was ordered to turn over the documents after he failed to quash the subpoena in court. Court said, give the documents. The court initially gave Trump until March 3rd to comply. The deadline was eventually extended to March 31st. Well, you know, damn, we're near the end of April. Hence the contempt of court ruling. Mr. Trump, I know you take your business seriously, according to the judge, Engoron. I know you take your business seriously, and I take mine seriously. I hereby hold you in contempt, civil contempt, and fine you $10,000 per day. I wish that would sting a little bit more. I think that Trump can probably afford, at least for a few months, to sustain this sort of $10,000 a day. And eventually the judge may determine a higher fine, greater penalties. But of course, the greater penalty would be to actually provide the documents sought and give the evidence of the fraud that's been perpetrated. I think that's his greater fear. It's not the 10 G's. He's getting that from the sheeple each and every time he hits the money button on his email list. 844-967-2789. Gene, welcome. What do you got for us? Hello, Gene.
Am I here? Hello?
Are you Gene? You are. Welcome. What do you got?
I'm sorry about that. I didn't hear my name spelled, then I was just listening patiently. Hey, thanks so much for having the candidate from my area of the state. I'm so proud of her. I'll tell you something. She's an outstanding candidate. She's got brains, she's got spunk, she's got good communication skills, and we need more women leaders because, you know, they know how to take care of families and individuals and things like that. So
Jeannie, thank you so much, Crute. Let me ask you, does the fact that she is a female and the fact that there are a lot of men running for that office, does that give her, quote unquote, a lane to run in, Jeannie? If I believe like you that we need more female leaders, well, she's the only one in the race currently. Seems like she'd be your front runner, Jeannie. How do you feel about her as a candidate? There are lots of fine men in the race, but she's the only woman. Does that matter to you?
Well, I'll tell you something. If you put a beard and mustache on her and men's clothes, I'd still think that she had spunk, intelligence, and would be an outstanding leader. I think, you know, and this is kind of biased, sorry about this, but there's been so many biases against women, not you guys, not people with a D after their name. But there have been a lot from the people with the R after their name, and independents. You know, I've been independent my entire life, never joined a party, and we want more females, too, to represent, you know, the day-to-day stuff. Plus, she can kick butt and take numbers. I mean, she's on top of all aspects of what's going on in our country right now and in our state. She's just intelligent, guys. She knows what's going on. She's been involved in this stuff, and I'm impressed by her, and you know it takes a lot to impress me, so I had to call in, and, you know, and being a female, it kind of makes me feel good that there's, you know, an intelligent female, you know, up in the top there. So anyway, guys, I'm going on and on. I'm kind of mushy about this. I got to tell you, I'm excited about her. Thanks a lot, guys.
Well, you're quite welcome, Jeannie. Thank you for listening. I wonder sometimes, do women have to be better? Do women have to be better? And I would say Sarah Godlewski is a better candidate than the vast number of candidates I've met. And I've been doing this show about 10 years. She's about as good as they come. Now, you know, is she the perfect candidate for you? I don't know. That's between you and your heart and the polling place. But I would say she is about as strong as a candidate as any candidate I've ever had the opportunity to interview. She is intelligent. She is message disciplined, and she knows what her message is. And I would say this, and I know this from my own experience. Sometimes the men are making it up. Sometimes they don't even bother preparing for debates and conversations of this sort. You know, they got their general concepts and they think they're going to do it on confidence and spunk and, you know, good firm handshake. Well, no doubt those are all important things. You know, who would you like to have a beer with? Well, Sarah told me it's, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm not quite ready for a beer. I got a little more campaigning to do today. But I've had a couple of beers with Sarah Godlewski. She's a pretty fine beer companion. And I've had a couple of beers with damn near everyone in this field. And I'm not casting any aspersions on any of the other candidates here because I like many of them. But I like some better than others. And I think some are stronger than others. And if you haven't figured it out yet, I've said this many times. I think that Sarah Godlewski's got a lot of it. Whatever that it quality is, that's where intelligence meets charisma, meets message discipline. She's got a lot of it, and I think that she is bound for higher office, and I guess time will tell whether or not she wins the primary here. Because if she wins the primary, at least her internal polling suggests she would beat Ron Johnson in the head-to-head. And I suspect she would, or at least she would have as good a chance as any. Here's something that may surprise you. We'll turn to senatorial politics for just a minute. You know who's super duper high in his polling? You know who's got a lot of it currently in the polls, a lot of juice? Joe Manchin. That seems quite surprising to me. Joe Manchin's been a roadblock, been a hindrance to much of the Biden agenda. But back home, people love him for it? Question mark. He certainly benefited from, you know, high polling numbers, but let me read a little bit. This is not just about Manchin, but Manchin's got some of the highest popularity in the nation amongst U.S. senators, which stings a little for us progressives, but let me read. Senator Joe Manchin is among, well, I think I just said that, is among the most popular senators in the country after seeing his favorability skyrocket back home over the past year, according to analysis of survey data released Monday. Morning Consult found that even as Manchin has faced backlash from progressives nationally, about 57% of West Virginia voters viewed him favorably in surveys conducted in January through March. His popularity jumped 17 points, up 17, more than any other senator compared to the same period last year. And the poll found that Manchin's popularity particularly grew among independent and Republican voters. Well, that should be no shocker in West Virginia, where it dropped amongst Democrats. That should be no shocker as well. Now, Manchin, who declares himself a moderate, has frequently staked out positions that have found him at odds with the White House and progressive leaders on issues such as expanding the social safety net. The center has identified inflation as the primary concern when lawmakers have discussed large-scale spending proposals and has often worked to scale back proposals. Yes, I hear Joe Manchin also a favorite of industry. A lot of corporations packing him, if you know what I'm saying. More to the recent polling. At the top of the popularity rankings, who are the most popular senators in the United States amongst their own voters? John Barrasso, Republican of Wyoming. John Thune, Republican of South Dakota. And here's one that should come as a surprise to no one listening to my voice. Bernie Sanders, state of Vermont. Once upon a time, I've only been politifacted one time in my whole life. And the statement I made that got me politifacted, a little old crudy, politifacted right here on the radio. I declared Bernie Sanders to be the most popular politician in the United States. And that was back in the 2017 timeframe. You know, after Joe Biden, well, before Joe Biden, I guess 17. That was after Trump won the presidency. Bernie had failed to win the primary. Obviously, Hillary Clinton had not won the presidency. But I made the bold claim, Bernie Sanders, most popular politician in America. And as fate would have it, I was rated mostly true. Because apparently in one poll during that time frame when they rated my statement as mostly true, the former president, in this case, Barack Obama, had one poll 1 point higher than my boy Bernie. I'm still calling him the most popular senator in America. Come back. More Devil's Advocates.
The Devil's Advocates. Never personal, only politics.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Monday edition. Welcome back from the 420 break. Talking about U.S. senatorial candidates, Sarah Godlewski joined me in studio earlier and talked about some of the more popular, surprisingly, Joe Manchin. Has seen a huge upswing in his popularity in the state of West Virginia. Of course, he represents that state. Now, most of the increase in popularity has come from independents and Republicans. He's seen a diminishment in his popularity amongst Democrats. And I think the Chamber of Commerce lobby likes him quite a bit. But anyways, couple of other thoughts. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell was viewed least favorably of all U.S. senators, with 60% of Kentucky voters saying they disapprove of the job he's doing. Negative 60. Right here in the great state of Wisconsin, we've seen somewhat recent Marquette University Law School polling. U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, I believe he's at a 53% disapproval rating. He didn't make it into this little article. But Mitch McConnell, negative 60. That's bad. McConnell has openly criticized former President Trump during the January 6, 2021 Capitol riot, though he has said he'd back the former president if he became the GOP presidential nominee again. Yeah, that's sad. You've got no courage, man. Trump took more than 62% of the vote in Kentucky in the 2020 presidential. So apparently Kentucky's turned against McConnell because he doesn't support Trump enough. Anyways, a little bit more here. 5 of the 10 most popular senators in the country are Republicans, while 3 are Democrats and 2 are independents who caucus with the Democrats. Among the 12 least popular senators, 10 are Republicans, while 2 are Democrats. Senator Kyrsten Sinema, another moderate who has frequently been in the middle with Manchin, was ranked amongst the least popular. Well, that's not a shocker either. Sinema has the disapproval of 42% of Arizona voters. I'm telling you, I wish I could find the rating on our boy, Ron Johnson. I'm going to dig into the broader polling, see if I can find something quickly here on U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. Where's he fall in this chart? Got to dig out the charts. Patrick Leahy had the largest drop in approval rating. Actually, Bernie has seen his drop, but he's still one of the most popular. But let's see where Ron Johnson falls on the chart. There's a lot of them, 100 senators. Bear with me. I'll continue talking like I've got something to say until I find Ron Johnson on the chart here. Oh, here he is. Ron Johnson, great state of Wisconsin. According to them, Ron's had like a 2% bump in his approval ratings. So he's gotten 2% better. Well, that's got to be good for Ron. He couldn't have gotten much worse. He has been a very unpopular senator here in the great state of Wisconsin, and the polling would seem to bear that out. Let me see if he makes the most unpopular list. Oh, he does. Here he is. Ron Johnson falls number 2 on the list of the least popular senators in the entire United States. The only one less popular than Ron Johnson, Mitch McConnell. Mitch, we just talked about the 60% disapproval rating and the 33% approval rating for Mitch. Well, Ron's got a robust 37% approval, 51% disapproval. That's a negative 14 overall. That makes him the second most unpopular U.S. senator in the entire Congress. 844-967-2789. Angie from Monroe. Welcome, Angie. What do you got for us?
Well, I know I've mentioned this on, like, the Facebook comments. We need to talk about how other states are going after our birth control. And they're going to make it outlawed where you can't get it in the mail. And then they're actually, I think they're actually going after birth control in marriages also, where you can't even choose whether you want birth control or not. And I don't know if men have really thought about this. Now, all of our, I used to go to the bars, and every once in a while, you know, you want to do a quickie or once in a while, you know, just have a little one-night stand.
Sure, I guess. Been a long time for me, Angie, but do tell more.
Those days are no more, you know? I mean, how many girls are going to want to do a quickie when they have no birth control? Think about this. And then how many babies... You have to pay for it. Some women, you breathe the wrong way and they get pregnant. And, you know, I mean.
I know, Angie. I got a wife like that at home. Let me ask you. We hear these efforts to control women's bodies, but I don't see a hell of a lot of effort to hold deadbeat dads accountable to their child support, to their duties as a father. It's like they get a free pass. The woman's got to deal with the child. Even as a result of rape or incest, depending on the state and the Christianity, air quotes, of the respective state legislature. But Angie, where does the men's accountability come from? I mean, you don't hear a lot of accountability for the men. In fact, former Trump aides, I believe Jason Miller, stands accused of sticking an abortion pill in his girlfriend's cocktail. You know, they'll more than willing to have theirs have abortions, you know, at least they don't want to get back to the wife.
My ex died owing me, my entire child support. I raised both my kids by myself, and I did it on a waitress wage. So, yeah, I mean, you got to, there has to be something else done with that. I think the more women we do get into, Congress in higher positions, that some of these women – like actually go through some of this, like say Katie Porter, who is a single mom. I'm very impressed with her.
She's, well, so, we all are, like Angie. She is incredibly impressive.
I love that whiteboard. She brings it out and they're like, oh no. But yeah, I just wanted to bring up the, you know, the birth control thing. I think we really need to, you know, constantly talk about it, because men are not, I mean, even if you're married, you're not going to want to have sex. You're not going to have birth control.
Well, Angie, after a certain point, your wife will send you down to see the doctor and do the right thing. But I would say the vast majority of men have not had vasectomies, and they'd like to be sexually active. I think we all enjoy a little something, if you know what I'm saying. Well, if you want sex, you have to give a woman control over the outcome of whether or not she can be impregnated or has to carry it to term. Come back with us. More Devil's Advocates. Phone lines open. 844-967-2789.
Occupy didn't start on Wall Street. It started on our street. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show, the Monday edition. I always appreciate when you participate at 844-967-2789. Going back to the phones right now, Chris from West Allis, you're next. Welcome, Chris.
Hello. I was listening to that lady talking to you about birth control and lady talk, and I decided I've been thinking about calling you for quite a while, and here it is. I'm a law and order person, and I want to talk about a law that's already on the books, and that is statutory rape. Now, I'm thinking that if a baby is born and the mother was under 18 and the father was over 18 when the baby was conceived, the father should be automatically guilty and sentenced to, 18 years in prison. And you can't get out of it with marriage, and you can't get out of it with money. What do you think?
Chris, you know, I got a couple of teenage boys, and, you know, I'm pretty sure they'd like to be sexually active. And ultimately, it takes two to tango. Certainly, they have a responsibility, if they are sexually active, to do their part, right? But there is no perfect birth control. You can take precautions. You can, you know, wear a prophylactic or whatever the case may be. And they're not infallible. So unwanted pregnancies can still result despite birth control, although they're pretty damn good. But Chris, I would like to see that person held accountable. If you stick the kid in jail for 18 years, the male, the sperm donor in this case, well, how's the sperm donor going to ever contribute towards the well-being of the child financially?
Well, I'm thinking if the sperm donor has a dog in the fight, maybe the sperm donor will start voting against people who want to keep women from having rights to their bodies.
Well, sure, in notion, I guess, Chris, but I don't think we can punish men per se in that regard. I don't think we can litigate a punishment, although I would certainly agree they should be sentenced to 18 years at minimum of child support. At minimum, you're responsible for helping to financially raise your child. But no, I don't want to see the fathers put in jail. Any more than I would want to see a mother, you know, put in jail for trying to abort a child that she didn't want to carry to term. So I don't want to see it punitive in that regard. But I think there are opportunities to hold both parties accountable. And certainly if someone is committing statutory rape, they should, you know, be charged with the crime. Should they sit in prison the rest of, you know, next 18 years? That seems harsh to me.
Well, okay, but I appreciate you saying that they should be that it is a crime and they should be found guilty of a crime. And I'm certainly welcome to negotiating the terms and conditions of their sentence.
Well, Chris, sure, and there's always going to be prosecutorial discretion. And in all probability, you actually want that new dad out there on the streets earning his keep and paying for the kid. But Chris, I guess, can't women, and I realize there are women that are coerced into sexual acts that they don't want to be a part of. You know, I, 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 I know that women have sex and it's not always of their own choosing or volition. But most often, you know, if my wife's got a headache or doesn't want whatever, you know, and I'm not trying to put my own sex life out there. I got a good wife at home. But if she says no, if she boycotts the bedroom, you know, I think she could be very persuasive, if you know what I'm saying, Chris.
Let me tell you, I have been places I really can't talk about on the phone. And had it been in this decade in the wrong state and the actions of somebody else had forced me into a pregnancy, there are places that men just don't go. And it just seems to me that we have to start evening out the punishment for forcing women into pregnancies they don't want. And that's where I'm going. I'm not sure how else to do it. I hear about this thing where they get rid of the condom in the middle of sex. And then what? Now the woman got pregnant, even though she went into sex knowing that it was protected. I don't know. I'm just trying to even the odds out. And if you have a better idea for it, I'm all ears. I don't think child support, since it never gets, it often doesn't get paid, and it seldom gets paid every time. So I'm not sure that that's a good enough punishment for somebody who causes a woman to have a pregnancy.
But Chris, do you think
baby she doesn't want?
Do you think the enforcement mechanisms are enough? I mean, you can't tell me the average guy that's healthy enough to out and impregnate a young lady, you can't tell me he's not going to work again in the next 18 years of his life. You know what I mean? There's got to be a more robust holding the people accountable. I mean, there are laws in the book, but you can't just let these people be deadbeat dads and, you know, not pay the child support.
That is the least that can be done, is the government gets seriously involved, and it isn't seriously involved in deadbeat dads or dads that cross state lines or dads that claim they don't have money or dads that just don't bother paying. You're right. That could be taken care of.
Chris, I appreciate the call. I just can't envision the sort of guy who has a kid and walks away from it. You know, I realize there are reasons that couples part, certainly. But walking away from the responsibility for the child, that's the part I cannot conceive of. I mean, having kids has been one of the greatest parts of my life. 844-967-2789. Nearly as important as talking to you fine folks on the radio every day, but don't tell the kids that. Chris from Madison, welcome. What do you got for us? Hey, Chris. Hello? Yes, I think you're next.
Hi. Yeah, sorry. Everything she said was fine, except for when it just really upset me in the beginning when she said the moment a guy turns 18, he's responsible for everything. Because my brother went through that. He turned 18, and his girlfriend didn't turn 18 for another month. And he got slapped with sexual assault of a minor,
like a statutory charge because she was not of an age of consent.
Correct. And now he just got off having to be a registered sex offender, and he's almost 50.
Wow. Well, that's a hell of a price to pay. I don't know what to say, man. You know, if she's under 18, she cannot legally consent. But
they're 2 weeks apart in age.
Well, Chris, I'm not doubting the veracity of the circumstance, but I would say that seems like an overly robust prosecution, if you know what I'm saying. You know, there should be circumstances that are considered. Now, maybe the circumstance was no time in jail, no time in prison, but, you know, we're going to monitor your activities for the next 32 years. Now, that seems like a lot of time to be on paper, a lot of time to register as a sexual offender. You know, I guess I don't know all the specifics, Chris.
Yeah.
But, you know, ultimately, we've all been in a position. I was an 18-year-old kid once upon a time. And, you know, I've been with the 17-year-old and said, you know, the party's got to stop here. Because you can't legally get a yes out of someone that's not of the age of consent. You know what I mean? Doesn't matter how horny you are, how good it feels. You gotta say no. And I'm sure with retrospect and hindsight, and it's my girlfriend, and you know, it was good up to a point, you know, I can't speak to his circumstance, Chris.
I don't think you can talk to an 18-year-old that way, because what's the difference between an 18-year-old and a 17-year-old as an 18-year-old? There's not, mentally, there's no difference.
Well, under
lots of states that have 5-year gaps for dating.
Well, Chris, obviously it was an unfortunate circumstance your brother went through. But the difference between a 17-year-old and an 18-year-old is one has reached the age of consent and the other is not. And legally, that makes a difference, as your brother well found out. 844-967-2789. Don't mean to relitigate every individual circumstance. There are certainly, everyone's got a story. You know what I mean? But for the vast majority of them, I just want them to take responsibility for a child you might father. That's the most important part to me. But anyways, I thought we were talking about U.S. senatorial candidates. But of course, if the abortion laws change through an act of the courts, all these questions are back in play. And not just whether or not someone's legally of consenting age, but if they were impregnated, this minor was impregnated through the sexual act. Does she even have the right to terminate the child in her own body, or the blastocyst, or the zygote, or however you want to look at it? Does she have autonomy over her own body? That's the greater issue. And then we've also got to figure out a way to hold the dads accountable. You know, if you don't want to pay the dime, you shouldn't have done the crime, as the case may be. 844-967-2789. When we have sex as consenting adults, we all know that pregnancy could be a consequence thereof. If you don't know, you better ask somebody. Annie from Watertown, ask her. Annie, you get it, right? What's your thoughts?
Well, you're talking about high school kids. And don't forget, they're not supposed to get sex education. Well, that's a disadvantage, I'd say. But being labeled a sex offender for something you did when you were 18, you aren't able to pick your kids up from school because you can't go near a school. You have to go around and tell everybody when you move, stuff like that. I think that's pretty heavy. But they made
Annie, you know, these laws are on the book to try and keep adult men from taking advantage of underage women.
Right.
It's not right. Really, really supposed to be for Romeo and Juliet sort of circumstances. There's a lot of men that marry a woman half their age, sometimes minor women half their age. That, I think, is more what the intent of the legislation that's now caught up some couples that are very close in age. But once someone crosses the line of consent, you know, you can't go there, Annie, not legally.
Well, and they've been doing it before they were 18. So all of a sudden they're supposed to stop. Good luck. But there was some kind of big enforcement. I don't know. Not allowing the judges perhaps to make the decision, which they should, you know, they should be able to look at it and say whether or not. But this law, a couple decades, I was at a picnic sitting with a bunch of old ladies and at the table at the picnic, and they were all from the very conservative church here in Watertown, very conservative. And one of the old ladies, she was 92, and she said, oh my, if that would have been so when I was young, my husband would have been in jail.
Mm-hmm.
She was 92. I love it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they were differing times, Annie, and I appreciate your call, and thanks for your point of view. 844-967-2789. Certainly want to hear differing perspectives because I've only got one. And yours are always welcome here, 844-967-2789. And here's my perspective on at least one new headline. Peepin' Bob Donovan apparently will not be the mayor of the great city of Milwaukee. You know, he lost that race, and then he immediately moved out to Greenfield. And now Bob tells us he's going to run for the state assembly from his new community of Greenfield. And, you know, if you look back in Bob's not so distant past, but let's say 25 years in his background, the Peeping Bob charge was a lot worse than looking through a window from a street corner. Come back with us. More Devil's Advocates.
The Devil's Advocates, tackling the issues you're not allowed to talk about at the dinner table.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Monday edition. My little buddy Dominic joining me soon. So stick around for that. It'll be worth your while. You can always be a part of this show. 844-967-2789. The only other really substantial booking I've got for the week I'd like you to make a note of, Al Franken joining the show on Wednesday night, about 3:30 Central Time. So, you know, tune in for Al Franken. He's actually coming to the Barrymore Theater in Madison on Friday night. That's the 29th. But if you don't have tickets yet, you might be out of luck. I think they're damn near sold out. So check with the Barrymore Theater if you want to see the Al Franken only former senator on tour. I believe it's coming Friday night. But let's talk about the former Milwaukee mayoral candidate, Bob Peepin' Tom Donovan. Well, apparently, new announcement at the Journal Sentinel. He's in it to win it. U.S. Assembly. The Wisconsin State Assembly. So anyways, a little bit of reporting here. Less than a month after losing a bid for Milwaukee mayor, former Alderman Bob Donovan announced Monday he's running for a seat in the state assembly. I'm just excited about the opportunity, Donovan told the Journal Sentinel. I think this is certainly a challenge that I'm up to, and we're going to give it our best fight. Well, of course, that's what you say. Donovan will be running as a Republican in the 84th Assembly District from his new home in Greenfield, right? He said he moved back to the suburban home within a week of losing the April 5th mayoral election to Cavalier Johnson. Donovan had said during the race that if he lost, he planned to return to his Greenfield condo where he and his wife moved after he retired as a Milwaukee Common Council member back in 2020. And for 20 years, Donovan represented Milwaukee's aldermanic District 8 on the city's south side, the area where he grew up. His early April loss was his second unsuccessful bid for mayor. He ran in 16 against then-mayor Tom Barrett. Yeah, he didn't win. On Monday, Donovan said he decided to run for assembly after being approached by a number of people about a campaign. Number of people are saying. He said he still has a lot to offer and is concerned about the problems in Milwaukee spreading to our suburbs. You know, the problems. And he said he'd like to be a part of fashioning a partnership between Milwaukee and the state of Wisconsin. Now, Milwaukee businessman David Karst, who is the current chairman of the Republican Party of Milwaukee County, well, he already filed in the 84th Assembly District, and the seat is currently held by State Rep Mike Kuglich, a Republican from New Berlin, who has announced he won't be seeking re-election. So I got to figure out who the good Dem is running that race and get on that horse, because who wants Peepin' Bob Donovan to be representing Waukesha County out there?
I mean, there's youthful indiscretions, and like that seems a little heavier to me.
Well, he wasn't so youthful in 1996 when he was cited for apparently being in the University of Wisconsin Milwaukee locker rooms, where a police officer, according to the old reporting from Daniel Bice back in 96, 28 years ago, apparently observed Bob observing another male in the stall for some period of 10 minutes or more. And according to the older reporting, he told Bicer, the Journal Sentinel at the time, apparently he used to go there to masturbate or find men to have sex with.
Which, hey, you know, who cares? It's the secret.
Well, it's, you know, glory holes in the men's locker room. Yeah. Yeah, maybe there's a little something wrong with that. You know, what you do in your own house, yeah. I got no qualms with. What you do down in the locker room at UWM that gets you cited publicly, that's a different story. But let's talk about other newly announced candidates in the great state of Wisconsin. I'm less familiar with this one, so I'm going to the reporting of Bruce Murphy, and he tells us, look out for Tim Michaels. Did you know there's another Republican gubernatorial candidate? Well, there is. His name is Tim Michaels. He ran in the state once upon a time. It's easy to make fun of Tim Michaels, the latest Republican candidate for governor. Oh, come on, Bruce. It's easy to make fun of all of them. But let me read on. He hasn't run for office since in 18 years, since a failed bid to defeat then-Senator Russ Feingold in 04. That's a lifetime in politics, and he's been invisible since then. Michaels, moreover, is entering a race awfully late and with less than 4 months to go before the Republican primary. And he made the cardinal error of letting others announce his candidacy before he did. So who announced for Michaels? Well, kind of, sort of, it was Tommy Thompson. Former Governor Tommy Thompson told WISN that Michaels was definitely running. Well, that was back on 420. And that was 2 days before Michaels got around to filling out the paperwork for his candidacy, and 5 days before Michaels' announcement today that he is indeed running for governor, turning that into old news. Now, the Democratic Party of Wisconsin had a field day with all this, with a press release Friday headline, "Did Tim Michaels forget to announce he's running for governor?" The release went on to note the inconvenient fact that Michaels is a member of the advisory board of the campaign launching group for Republican Rebecca Clayfish. Well, that's more embarrassing for Clayfish's campaign than Michaels, isn't it? She, of course, had the 1848 project, and she was seen, and I think she probably still is, the GOP primary frontrunner. It's also noted that Michaels is a member of the Board of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, the dark money group that endorsed Clayfish and is running ads supporting her candidacy. Yes, that is embarrassing. Michael's peculiar delay in announcing his campaign meant that the first story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels was not the usual positive introduction for a candidate, but instead one noting he will have to address how he will handle work his family business does with the state and how he will avoid conflicts of interest if he's elected. Well, it seems like you would have cleaned up a couple of those things before you made the announcement, but you know, when you make Tommy Thompson make the announcement for you, well, you know, it gets all a little peculiar. A little bit more here. Michaels Corp received more than $660 million in payments from the state over the last five fiscal years. So that's only like, you know, $110 million a year, a little bit more than that. But despite all those negatives, Michael has to be seen as a threat, not just to Clayfish and the other Republican candidates, but to Democratic incumbent Tony Evers. Why? Because he could spend huge amounts of money. Michaels is the co-owner of the family business, the Michaels Corp, a privately held company based in Brownfield, Wisconsin, in Dodge County. The company has seen spectacular growth over the last 25 years, growing from a few hundred employees to a multifaceted construction company with more than 8,000 employees. That's a lot of employees. That's a big business. How many facets are itemized by the company's website, which lists 9 Michaels companies, including Michaels Construction, Michaels Power, Michaels Utility Service, and Michaels Pipeline? A lot. And it's got $3 billion a year in annualized revenue. That's pretty good. It's a lot of jing. So, another self-funder on the Republican side. Well, that's got a sting if you're, you know, Becky Clayfish or Kevin Nichols, who's relying on somebody else's money, or hell, even if you're conspiracy-toting Ram Jam. 4 is a party. Come back, more devils.